भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 73. Lord Krishna blesses the liberated kings. And we have several verses. We're reading text 21 to the end of the chapter 35. Okay, so we'll do text 21 together, and then I'll just read the rest. Bhavante etad vijyaya dehad yutpadyamantavat mam yajanto dvarayar yukta vajadarmena rakshata bhavante etad vijyaya Dehad yutpadyamantavat mam yajanto dvarayar yukta prajadarmena rakshita bhavanta etad vijyaya Dehad yutpadyamantavat Mam yajanto dvarayar yukta prajadarmena rakshita. Ladies. Bhavanta, you, etat, this, vidyaya, understanding, deha adi, the material body, and so forth. Utpadyam, subject to birth. Antavat, having an end. Mam, me. Vijanta, worshipping. Advarayar, with Vedic sacrifices. Yukta, having clear intelligence. Raja, your citizens. Dharmena, according to religious principles. Rakshita, you should protect. translations by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And this is continuation of Lord Krishna's instructions to the kings. Understanding that this material body and everything connected with it have a beginning and an end, worship me by Vedic sacrifices, and with clear intelligence protect your subjects in accordance with the principles of religion. Since there's so many verses, I'll just read the English. As you live your lives, begetting generations of progeny and encountering happiness and distress, birth and death, always keep your mind fixed on me. Be detached from the body and everything connected to it. Remaining self-satisfied, steadfastly keep your vows while concentrating your minds fully on me. In this way, you will ultimately attain me, the supreme, absolute truth. Shukadeva Goswami continued, having thus instructed the kings, Lord Krishna, the supreme master of all the worlds, engaged male and female servants in bathing and grooming them. O descendant of Bharata, the Lord then had King Sahadeva honor them with offerings of clothing, jewelry, garlands, and sandalwood paste, all suitable for royalty. After they had been properly been bathed and adorned, Lord Krishna saw to it they dined on excellent food. He also presented them with various items befitting the pleasure of kings, such as betel nut. Honored by Lord Mukunda and freed from tribulation, the kings shone splendidly, their earrings gleaming just as the moon and other celestial bodies shine brightly in the sky at the end of the rainy season. Then the Lord arranged for the kings to be seated on chariots drawn by fine horses and adorned with jewels and gold, and pleasing them with gracious words, and sent them off to their own kingdoms. Thus liberated from all difficulty by Krishna, the greatest of all personalities, the kings departed, and as they went, they thought only of him, the Lord of the universe, and his wonderful deeds. The kings told their ministers and other associates what the personality of Godhead had done, and then they diligently carried out the orders he had imparted to them. Having arranged for Bhimasena to kill Jarasandha, Lord Keshava accepted worship from King Sahadeva and then departed with the two sons of Pita. When they arrived at Indraprastha, the victorious heroes blew their conch shells, bringing joy to their well-wishing friends and sorrow to their enemies. The residents of Indraprastha were very pleased to hear that sound, for they understood that now the king of Magadha had been put to rest. That means he was killed. It's interesting, then, the word for word there, shantam, is the word to put to rest, you know, peacefully. Anyway. The king of Magadha had been put to rest. King Yudhisthira felt that his desires were now fulfilled. Bhima, Arjuna, and Janardhan offered their respects to the king and informed him fully about what they had done. Upon hearing their account of the great favor Lord Keshava had mercifully shown him, King Dharmaraj shed tears of ecstasy. He felt such love that he could not say anything. This ends the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 73rd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Krishna Blesses the Liberated King. Om Jnana Kapandasya, Gyananjana Salakaya, Chakshu Minitanya, Pasma Shri Gurave Nyan. Once you call for two of this child, keep us in the day of the child, like the final problem of your emotion. So, I was wondering why there are no purports. There are many verses here that look like they had philosophical import. Actually, I was not seeing the Vishnu Chakravarti Kaur wrote no purports. Apparently, the other acharyas didn't, and in the Krishna book, Prabhupada didn't really comment on these either, so we follow in the line of the acharyas, and where they did not comment so much, we don't comment so much, so I won't say so much about these specific verses, but there are some interesting points here. And one thing that we see, of course, all of these activities, I was looking at these later chapters of the 10th canto, chapter 70 and 80, and they're often pastimes we don't, at least myself, probably don't read as much or think about as much often as we do the Vrindavan pastimes. But these Dwarka pastimes are actually very interesting. They're actually full of excitement and intrigue, adventure, and just glorious activities by Krishna. They're just so attractive and so appealing. And there's so many philosophical points just packed within, you know, each chapter and within the verses of the Bhagavatam. So, I think it's probably been a long time since I read some of these pastimes, you know, Krishna book or whatever. So I think this is a really wonderful opportunity we have to hear all of these Bhagavatam stories. One thing I noted throughout this chapter is the mood and action of service. This seems very prevalent. We see, first of all, of course, the kings are offering prayers and worshiping Krishna, but Krishna then in turn is actually serving them and worshiping them. He's nicely dressing and, you know, doing everything because, you know, they were a mess when they came out of their imprisonment for many, many years in the cave or the prison or wherever they were. So he got them all nicely dressed and cleaned up and all of this. And he actually, you know, was arranging personal service to them. And then, of course, then also Sahadev was Jarasandha's son, right? The new king, obviously did not take after his father. And then he's also worshiping the kings and worshiping Krishna. And then they return to Hastinapur. And Maharaj Yudhisthira is so happy to see them. And he's so grateful to the service that Krishna and his brothers, Bhima and Arjuna, have given to him. Because by killing Jarasandha, that paved the way for the Rajasuya sacrifice. That was the last obstacle, right? They had defeated or gotten the compliance of all of the kings throughout the entire universe except Jarasandha, which no one could defeat. So, of course, they made this arrangement. Krishna went there with Bhima and Arjuna. Bhima kills him. And now everything is pretty much, I think the only one we have left to deal with is Shishupal, which next chapter he'll get taken care of. And then, so most of the demons were, you know, later they still have Duryodhana and his friends to deal with. But still, you know, little by little, Krishna is doing his job of eradicating the world of the demoniac influence of all of these demoniac kings. At the same time, he's showing these wonderful principles of service. The service given to him, the service of the devotees to each other, and even Krishna personally serving his devotees. So I think this mood of service is very appropriate for us to talk about today. As you all know, today is Labor Day, right? You know, it's Labor Day, the first Monday of September, and Labor Day for most people means a day off from work and school, right? And it also means the end of the summer season. Not so much here. We have another month or two of summer season. But in the north, it's kind of the last warm holiday before fall begins. So that's what it is for most people. But Labor Day was actually started in the 1880s as a tribute to or a sort of a concession to the labor organization and the labor movement that was growing. And the U.S. Department of Labor's website calls this as a tribute to the accomplishment of our workers, you know, doing such wonderful things. In reality, it didn't have quite such a peaceful history. There was a lot of strife during the 1880s between labor and management. The unions were starting to grow, and there was the Haymarket riots and the Pullman strikes, very bloody. And so some of the labor unions were pushing for recognition of labor, and of course the government decided this is an easy way to appease them, you know, yeah, give them a day, no problem. You know, so in other words, it was actually born out of intense labor management strife. But nevertheless, 120, 30 years later, people have a nice day off. So that's what they think of it. Now, it's kind of interesting because when you think about this idea of labor or work, it's a reflection of what? What do we call it? Service. Yes, bhakti, devotional service, seva. So we very much value this idea of work or service. Of course, I was just looking in the index of Bhagavad Gita, and there's like pages in the index under the word work. But normally, work is a reference to the word karma, right? Karma or action, which is often Prabhupada translates as work. So, you know, this idea of work and action and karma and all this and service is very, very much a very integral part of our philosophy. So devotees don't so much talk about work. We don't say, well, what work are you doing today for both in the temple? We say, what service are you doing? Because there's a real contrast between the material conception of work and the spiritual conception of bhakti or devotional service. So I thought I'd talk about that a little bit today. What devotional service is, what is bhakti, and how does it compare to a material conception of labor or work that we are thinking about on this Labor Day. First of all, I was thinking it's interesting that the materialists, I guess basically everyone in this world, on Labor Day, because it's only in America, I think, they take a day off, right? In other words, they celebrate labor by not laboring. The idea is, okay, this is Labor Day. We're celebrating our work and our labor, so let's not work. Shows we don't really like to work that much. You know, in contrast, devotees are always trying to increase service. We're not, you know, I was thinking this Labor Day weekend was very unusual because we had Janmashtami on a Saturday, Vyas Puja on Sunday, and now Labor Day, of course, on Monday. We very rarely have that opportunity because of the way the calendars fall that we had these wonderful celebrations on a Labor Day weekend. And so what that meant was, some of you may have noticed, I was standing about 10 feet back on the porch. I couldn't even get in the temple room at Vyas Puja, you know, at Srila Prabhupada's Vyas Puja. I mean, it was so packed. It was so filled with devotees. So in other words, a lot of devotees had the day off. They didn't have to work. They didn't have to go to school. So what were they doing? They weren't all at the beach, were they? Or at the springs. They were here worshiping Srila Prabhupada and worshiping Srila Radhakrishna Sundara. This is what the devotees do. The devotees use the opportunity of extra time for extra worship. Of course, we don't do this every weekend, but still, the point is that devotees relish the opportunities to take time for extra service and for extra worship. And I was thinking that during these festivals, so many devotees were involved. I don't know, what do you think, Grisha? A couple hundred devotees directly worked on some aspect? I mean, just the list we saw just on the altar and the deity worship alone were 50 to 100 devotees, what to speak of everything else that was done from prasadam, cooking, serving, cleaning, setting up. We had the wonderful, you know, village of Vrindavan. We had so many things going on, this wonderful Vyasasan. And even some of us who didn't do so much directly, you know, one thing that's wonderful, nice about, you know, being a GBC has a lot of negative sides to it, to be honest. But you know what a positive side is? You get a lot of credit for things that other people do. And sometimes people say, oh, you have such wonderful festivals in Alachua. Of course, I don't do a thing. You know, it all goes on by the wonderful devotees and the management here and everything, you know. It just goes on somehow or another by the bhakti of the devotees, you know. But all of us at least increased our coming to the temple. We increased our hearing and chanting, didn't we? We spent more time. We were chanting more. We were hearing that yesterday. We heard a few hours, most of us, the glories of Srila Prabhupada, the wonderful enlivening discussion of the glories of the pure devotee. And so we increase service. We don't decrease it. We don't take, you know, we don't necessarily want to take time off. And the other aspect is that most people will not do their job, would not go to work except for one thing. What do they get? Money. They get a salary, right? Well, naturally, we all have to work. Krishna says that's the nature of this material world. As Krishna says, even he has to work, right? He said, or everything would go to ruin. So, in the third chapter, what's the verse that says that everyone must work even to maintain the body? Something like that, right? So that's there. It's part of the material world. Everyone has to work. And we call it sometimes dharma. It's our particular duty. It's what we have to do. It's not that we say people shouldn't work. At the same time, most people don't really enjoy work very much, do they? You hear about people who win a lottery or something, and what's the first thing they do? They quit their job. They quit their job. Now, I mean, a few people are fortunate that they may have some job that they like, but most people will not do that without some material reward. In fact, it's considered that if you do like your work, it's like some special fortune, right? You're very fortunate if you like your work. Like somehow I've been fortunate. What I do to make money is I teach a college class. You know, I teach at a university on the internet. I like doing that. I like teaching. It's easy for me. You know, so that's like, you know, it's kind of blessed in that way. But for most people, it's just you got to do something to make money. You know, of course, if I didn't need to do it, I probably would stop it immediately too. You know, if I had the money, that'd be the last class I would teach because it's materialistic subjects. Who really cares that much, right? So but devotees derive pleasure from the service itself. We don't need to be paid to do devotional service. I don't think anybody of those 200 or 300 devotees probably who were helping putting on this festival, did anyone get paid for that? I don't think so. We didn't say, we'll give you $10 an hour if you set up the tents, or if you, no, I mean, a few devotees get some, I would say some pittance of devotee maintenance or some support. But, you know, it's funny. I don't know one devotee in the movement who probably, even if they get some support or some, you know, some salary, get as much as they could make outside. You know, usually everyone is either not paid or underpaid. That's the way it is. And, you know, it's like, and we don't really mind or complain that much. Sometimes we do. But we don't complain that much because it's service. We understand. It's bhakti. It's giving back to the Lord. It's giving back to Srila Prabhupada. I mean, we've been given absolutely everything. And so many devotees yesterday were talking about what Srila Prabhupada gave us, what we received from Srila Prabhupada, how we received our eternal spiritual life. So we give back a little bit and we don't get paid so much. So what? What does that mean in terms of an eternity of lifetimes in this material world? And the opportunity we've been given by Srila Prabhupada to get out of this material world and to go back to Godhead, to reestablish our loving relationship with Krishna. You know, it's immeasurable. So we perform our work, our service, our bhakti, our seva, out of love, not for a salary. And that's very different. Very few people have that great fortune to actually find that pleasure within the activity they do. Srila Prabhupada talks about this to purport to Bhagavad Gita 18:54. He says, the devotee in Krishna consciousness has nothing for which to lament or desire. Since God is full, a living entity who is engaged in God's service in Krishna consciousness becomes also full in himself. He is just like a river cleansed of all dirty water. Because a pure devotee has no thought other than Krishna, he is naturally always joyful. He does not lament for any material loss or aspire for gain, because he is full in the service of the Lord. He has no desire for material enjoyment, because he knows that every living entity is a fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and therefore eternally a servant. And that's the real point. We understand that service is our constitutional position, our Sanatana Dharma. It is who we are. It is not something we do. It is our nature. It is our character. It is inherent in our very being. So we are simply reawakening that dormant spiritual nature of servant of the Lord. He's also thinking about not only do people not really like the work so much, but they're usually trying to always decrease that amount of work. The history of the labor movement, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that, I mean, probably before the labor movement, you know, everything was on the side of the capitalists. You know, they had all the control, and they certainly exploited the workers. We all know that. Child labor and long hours and horrible working conditions. So certainly they had many, many legitimate grievances. You know, as a devotee, I was in unions and stuff, and I was very strong on all of this. But let's face it, what they really have tried to do is pretty much work the least they can. In other words, decrease the hours, more holidays, more time off, you know, more vacation time and like this, retire early and earlier. So basically, people want to work the least they can and make the most amount of money. That's natural. We, you know, that's to be expected, you know. And, of course, in contrast, devotees are not looking to do that. Devotees are thinking how they can increase. Sometimes I talk to devotees, devotees who have families, devotees who are working jobs, you know, and but they're good devotees. Not but. They are good devotees. And they, yeah, come on, we've all had jobs and families like that. So, I mean, it's, and sometimes when I talk to them, they're thinking about how they can do more devotional service. You know, they've already sort of planned in their life, well, I'm at this age, I can cut back on my work a little bit, my children will be grown. And they're thinking about how they can do more service. In contrast, they're thinking about, oh, when can I retire and do less work? They're thinking about, when can I retire from work and do more devotional service, do more for Krishna, do more for this movement, do more for Srila Prabhupada. And that's just such a wonderful mentality the devotees have in contrast to the non-devotees. So, of course, we want to increase the service, and we also want to increase our sadhana, our hearing and chanting. And those two things go together. Probably described like parallel tracks, you know, the Goshti Nandi and the Bhajan Nandi tracks. the hearing and chanting, along with the practical service and preaching work. Both of those must be there. Because as one engages more in service, it brings one closer to Krishna, and one wants to hear and chant more about Krishna. And as one hears about Krishna and chants more about Krishna, one naturally wants to increase one's service and do more for Krishna. So the two are mutually supporting, and they work together. I think of a couple of good examples of these. One was, this was another letter, my initiation letter, that was written to the temple president. And along with giving our names and like that, the temple president had asked Srila Prabhupada, this was Sri Govinda in Chicago, he said, some devotees complain about over-endeavor. Because Prabhupada once used this word over-endeavor, don't over-endeavor, and so devotees were kind of picking up on that. You know, the temple president would ask them to do some more work, and they say, that's over-endeavor, Prabhupada can't do it. You know, so the temple president was getting a little frustrated. And this is the issue of Prabhupada. So sometimes devotees complain about over-endeavor. He says, what is over-endeavor? And Srila Prabhupada said, and this was actually, he said to all of us, this is my letter to me, initiation. As long as one is chanting 16 rounds and attending classes, we can work like anything. But one lick done for Maya is useless over endeavor. So anyway, I guess that supported the temple president a little bit. But his point was that as long as we're working for Krishna, you know, we can work endlessly. But you do anything for Maya, that's over endeavor. That's too much. But he also emphasized as long as one is chanting and hearing. The chanting here, it's not that we simply work all day and neglect chanting around so hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam class. That's very, very important. And Prabhupada always emphasized that because that gives us the spiritual strength and the understanding to perform that service throughout the day. Otherwise, that service will start to become mundane. We'll start to think of it as simply material. It's another job. How much work do I have to do today? Unless we are hearing and chanting and constantly remembering why we are doing the service. There was a story that Tamal Krishna Goswami told. He was talking about once he was working really hard. I think it was Los Angeles. He was a temple commander. And everybody knows, if anyone's ever done that job, Krishna Keshava knows what's involved. It's really, can be stressful. I did it once for a few months, and I very quickly got someone else to do it. You know, because, you know, it's like you got to worry about everything being done and all the pots being washed and who's doing this. Anyway, he was getting really frustrated, and he said, I just can't take anymore. And Prabhupada told him, we should pray for this situation to be so constantly engaged in Krishna's service that Maya cannot find any means to enter. That is fortunate. So to have too much devotional service is to be in a fortunate position. So many of you who are thinking that you're in a little overwhelmed and overworked, think how fortunate you are. Actually, the worst thing is to not have devotional service. That's like a curse, isn't it? To not have service. To have service is a blessing because it allows us to, you know, directly be connected with Krishna and with Prabhupada. So Maya will enter easily, Prabhupada is saying, unless we are fully engaged. He gave a nice example I once. I was thinking of this story of a seat on a train. And I don't know if I haven't heard this one for a long time. I don't know if I have it exactly right, but it was something like this. Prabhupada was saying that just like, you know, you're seated in a train. And if you think about trains in India, you can actually imagine a scenario better, not so much in America. So you're in India, and you're on a seat in the train. There's a little tiny spot left next to you. And a family comes in, and they don't have a seat. And so they say, can my little daughter or my little son please sit here? You know, he's so tired. So he sits there, and then for my other one, and then they move, you know. And so finally it's like, and oh, my old mother, she's so old, can she please sit here? So he said, so eventually he says, you know, you've lost your seat, you've fallen off the other end, and the family's taken over your seat. So what does that mean? Prabhupada said, that's how Maya is. Maya comes in inch by inch, little by little, like that, if we're not careful. We have to be very careful because, you know, comes in a little bit more, and pretty soon we find ourselves, you know what? You know, and you're almost like, where's my Krishna consciousness? So we have to be very careful that way. And the way that we do that is by careful attention to our hearing and chanting, as well as engaging fully in Krishna consciousness. I was thinking of one other aspect, thinking about Labor Day, And the relationship between labor and management, you know, tends to be an adversarial one, doesn't it? I mean, it started out that way with, you know, they were actually having riots and, you know, police were called in. And even still, today it's this idea of labor and management being some kind of struggle. But it shouldn't be that way. You know, it should be that everyone is working together cooperatively. And that was the Vedic society. Everyone worked according to their varna and ashram cooperatively together. You know, and when that isn't that way, when we have an adversarial relationship or we have strife between different groups or different classes or who's in charge, who's not, there's usually some envy, isn't it? I mean, the sort of the root cause of all of our struggle and conflict is envy that's in our heart. And we see that when there is, when there are those kind of difficulties, somehow or another we haven't usually conquered envy. Devotional service is based upon mutual love and service. Just like we saw in the story that we're reading in the Bhagavatam today, example of Krishna and the kings, there was mutual service, there was mutual love, there was reciprocation. You know, I find this interesting. It wasn't just that the kings were all worshiping Krishna and praying to Krishna, and Krishna was serving them. So not that we expect Krishna to serve us, but it's the example of the reciprocation that is there. We have love for Krishna. Krishna has even more love for us. And Krishna is always reciprocating. Like Prabhupada said, we take one step towards Krishna and he takes five steps towards us, or however many the story is. You know, I don't have the details. Anyway, he takes more steps towards us than we take towards him. So when bhakti is missing in the equation, in the relationship, then there can be envy. And when there is envy, there's not really nice service. Then you're back to work. You know, you're out of the realm of devotional service. You're out of the realm of bhakti, of seva. So the closer that we come to real love, the less envy is there. I was thinking of a very clear example. Srila Prabhupada gave such a nice example of this. He gave us an example of the relationship between a mother and a child. And he gave us this example of the closest thing we could find in the material world to bhakti, to spiritual love. He says you can see it somewhat in the relationship between parents and children. Now, why is that? Because there is this idea of just service without reward, right? The parent doesn't really expect to get a lot back. And if you do, your expectations are probably going to be disappointed, you know, but of course, when they grow up and become wonderful devotees, then of course we're very happy. But sometimes that doesn't happen. It's a complete gamble, you know. So what's going to happen? But still, the parent does everything for the child out of love. And I was thinking about that because when there is this love, there's not envy. Isn't that what characterizes, say, a parent's relationship with a child? If a child becomes very successful, does the parent, usually, does not become envious, right? They become happy. The parent is ecstatic if a child is succeeding, doing really well, having success, you know, being recognized. The parent is so happy because there's no envy. They only want the best for the child. Now, of course, you could say there's material tangents. It's not a perfect example, of course, but we can get the idea that that is somewhat like the relationship, you know, between Krishna and the devotees. If we have that relationship of love where we don't have, where we're becoming, not that we're free, the fact that we're in this material world means we have envy in our heart, but we're trying to become free from that. We have made a conscious decision by becoming devotees of Krishna that I want to give up that envious position. I want to return to my loving relationship of pure devotional service. Now, I may not be there yet, and I may have some ways to go to cleanse my heart of all the envy and of all the dirt within the heart and all the material desires. But nevertheless, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we have made that declaration. At least this is what I want. This is what I'm striving for. Become free from this. And we learn to do that under the guidance and direction of the spiritual master. So the quality of the devotee is that he understands this nature of envy, this nature of material attachment, and strives to give it up. In a lecture in Amnabha 1972, Srila Prabhupada described this. He said, devotees, they are paradukaduki. The symptom of a devotee is they are unhappy by seeing others unhappy. Generally, a person, if he sees somebody happy, he becomes unhappy. Matsarata, that is the world's situation. If I see my brother is very happy, he has improved in his material condition, and I become unhappy. Therefore, spiritual advancement means the person who is not envious. Paramo nimatsaranam satam vatsava vasvi vedyam. Bhagavatam 1.1.3. Matsara means envious, nimatsara, not envious. This is called material condition, that we are envious. This is the position, and therefore Krishna begins the Bhagavad Gita to get out of this ignorance and enviousness. This is the basic principle of Bhagavad Gita. And of course, Bhagavad Gita 9.1, Krishna says to my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, it is anusuya there, you are never envious, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge. So Arjuna's qualification to receive the most confidential knowledge of Bhagavad Gita directly from Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, because he was not envious. He had this pure relationship of friendship with Krishna. So sometimes it's difficult for us to understand because we think, well, I don't think I'm envious. I don't feel envious, but it is there. It's our natural, it's our original envy of Krishna brings us to this material world. And that envy then expands to envy of other living entities. Now, hopefully as devotees, we are understanding that principle and we are giving up that envy. We're learning to do it, and we're becoming purified by the practice of Krishna consciousness. Everything we do in Krishna consciousness, when you think about it, is the opposite, isn't it? We try to do service that is selfish, that is unmotivated and uninterrupted, right? Bhagavan tells us that's the way devotional service should be performed, unmotivated and uninterrupted. So we may not be completely unmotivated, but to the degree that we perform service in this way, then the heart becomes purified, and eventually we will be unmotivated, and eventually our service will be uninterrupted. So the opposite of this envy is this service attitude. The devotee has the desire to serve everyone. And the degree that we want to serve and how we expand that level of service and an understanding of service, and the mood of service, as that expands to more and more a wider circle of living entities, has to do with our spiritual advancement, doesn't it? The degree that we are spiritually advanced, the degree that we feel this non-enviousness and the desire is to do good for all living entities. Right? So we should strive to see others to be happy in Krishna consciousness. We want to bring people to Krishna, bring people to understand this philosophy. Why? To free them of their suffering. Sometimes, you know, people ask or note that, you know, Srila Prabhupada sometimes spoke very strongly. You know, he'd even, you know, and even like Prahlad Maharaj called them, you know, these fools and rascals, you know, mudhas, like that. But why do the acharyas speak strongly? It is because they are so filled with compassion for the living entities, understanding their suffering, that they're somehow trying to wake them up. They're saying, please, don't be a fool. Don't continue to suffer lifetime after lifetime in this material world, but wake up to your true nature as a loving servant of Krishna and be happy. So for the devotee, their greatest pleasure is giving Krishna consciousness to others and to be able to serve the devotees, to serve the guru, and to serve Krishna. Then they become fully satisfied. And at that point, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. There is some discussion. Janmashtami.
Very nice class. I have a question about Kailasha. I'd heard this point that Prabhupada made before. That it's not over-endeavoring as long as we maintain our sadness.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, accuracy and preference. I mean, separate. There's maybe some more tweaking.
Sure.
Like the 617 Yukahara Vihara Shayu Pachushka Shatama Sutra, that one should be regulated in eating, sleeping, work, and recreation. And it seems that when we don't do that, then we start both getting fried. We're not balanced.
And of course, that is a good point. I think many aspects of Krishna consciousness are like this, you know, that there's often a balance that's needed, and there's different viewpoints, different perspectives that need to be reconciled. So we need to reconcile this point that one can work constantly for Krishna without, and it's not over endeavor. At the same time, the points that you're raising, you know, that one has to be practical and has to, you know, that just reminded me, someone recently in class was telling the story about chapatis, about how many chapatis to eat. When was that? A couple days ago. Yeah, Prabhupada said eat 2 chapatis, and then he said, well, if you can digest 12 chapatis, eat 12 chapatis. So in other words, you don't want to take the first sentence and not take the second sentence, you know, that goes along with it. So it depends upon our capacity. In other words, as our capacity develops, we can do more and more devotional service. At the same time, you know, we do have to maintain these bodies we're in. I mean, some of us find that we get to a certain age where we probably are doing less physical service than we used to. I mean, I know I am. I'm probably doing less physical service. I try to do other kinds of service to make up for my deficiencies a little bit. But, yeah, we have to be healthy. Okay, yes. And hold on a second. Yes, you are live on the microphone.
Is it right to think that maintaining the body, if you do it in the service of Krishna, that is also the so you do service for Krishna that's in the temple floors, and then if you're getting enough sleep so that you can get up and stretch around, you think that that's also service?
Sure.
I read on Jayashirada's wall, I can't remember the verse, but it says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you, et cetera,
you do that.
So is it right to combine that if you're eating well and you're sleeping well, that's, if you have it in the mood or I need to get this kind of sleep, that's also service self and preparation.
Sure, of course. And, you know, Prabhupada, you know, he quoted that expression, that I think it's a Christian expression, that the body is a temple of God. In other words, this is the vehicle that we do our service in. So if we don't maintain the body properly, then how will we serve? If I'm too tired, if I'm too weak, if I'm getting sick, then how can we serve? So yes.
So if I had to turn down or pass on a certain service because I have done enough or I've done exhausted, it would be in favor of it's not a separate thing.
Sure. No, and the thing is, and that's an internal thing, and we all sort of know what our capacity is, you know, what we can do and what we can't do, and we have to be reasonable about that. I think that our mood as a devotee is generally to think, how should we increase? Now, that doesn't mean, you know, if I'm sleeping 7 hours at night, I should start sleeping 4 hours a night. I mean, in other words, so that I can do 3 hours more service, it might mean, you know, 5 minutes less or something. You know what I mean? It's like sometimes we have to do things gradually, step by step, in what's practical for us. You know, if we become too extreme, sometimes we call that fanaticism. In other words, too fanatical, too extreme, which is really means working beyond our level of realization. Or our level of capacity. You know, we have certain capacities, we have a certain level of realization, we have certain abilities that we all bring. You know, and we do need to work within that. You know, and I mean, even, you know, Krishna said, Arjuna, better to do one's own duty perfectly than another's duty. So, you know, if we're in a particular position, we should be doing that and performing those duties and responsibilities and not trying to jump to something that isn't appropriate. Yes. And then
one, I can't give you where or when, but Prabhupada in his books I've read, he said one is rewarded for true service. It's reward.
A reward.
And, I don't know if you can comment on that. It seems like we have mixed consciousness of our services. And the reward of devotional service is spiritual service.
I think that's a great point. You made the point very well. Yes, we're rewarded for our devotional service by getting more devotional service. Right. In other words, or perhaps even that devotional service increases or intensifies, or our realization intensifies about that. And that service becomes deeper and more. Yeah, and that is definitely rewarded directly by Krishna. Someone was saying recently that, you know, there's two aspects of it. One, we have to understand that anything that we receive, any reciprocation, any advancement, any understanding, realization, is directly the mercy of Krishna and Guru. And at the same time, we need to strive in such a way to, you know, show Krishna our devotion so that we receive that. So it's, we understand that bhakti itself is a reward, and bhakti is the source of more bhakti, and bhakti is the result of bhakti.
I remember one lecture of putting this hierarchy in the matrix. India, Nahur, India, Paramana, Manastra, Parabuddhi, Buddhistha, Parapaksha. I said the senses are above the sense object, and the mind is above the senses, and the intelligence is above. Mm-hmm. And then the soul is the ultimate. So then in that explanation, Prabhupada says, just like an example, if you sleep too little, you'll be crazy, and if you sleep too much, you'll be lazy. Mm. So as a devotee, we don't want to be crazy or lazy. In the same lecture, and then Prabhupada says, 6 hours, in the same lecture, is 6 hours a devotee should be maintaining. But then I was told, later on when Prabhupada, after the class, they asked, oh, you don't sleep 6 hours, Prabhupada. So he says, that when you are convinced, your conviction to dedication to the Lord, then automatically the subtle control the physical and it adjusts.
Yeah.
So in other words, if I'm convinced, like practically I see then within myself, I used to love sleeping. And I love to get up and chant. So I see that it is actually effect as one wants to, or conveniently wants to act on.
Yeah, that's a really interesting and probably, you know, it's a very involved point about how our spiritual advancement affects changes the subtle body, which then actually changes and affects the gross body. Yeah. And that probably has to do with how much we eat, how much we sleep. And even when you think about when Prabhupada was very, very ill, you know, he said that the doctor said anybody else would be practically screaming in pain, you know, because his condition was so serious. Prabhupada was able to tolerate that. It's not exactly like Prabhupada didn't feel pain. It's not that your senses go away and become numb. But as you said, that spiritual advancement that's there, you know, changes the subtle body, and therefore the whole consciousness of what the material body and senses is experiencing is different. Exactly what the experience is, I don't know yet. But we can see from Srila Prabhupada, it was there. It was there. There was certainly a difference in the way that one responds to the pains and pleasures of the material body based upon advancement.
Hare Krishna. I was thinking regarding Mandy's point that it is important to kind of balance things out and be practical. But I feel for myself at the same time I have to push myself a little bit because the philosophy is that I'm not this body. So I don't have the full realization of that. But to try to get more of an understanding of that, I feel like I need to sometimes push myself and do a little bit more than I think I can to see that, yeah, I'm not this body, and I'm dependent on the Supreme Lord. So it's not just about what I think I can do.
That's a real good point. Yes, we also, our effort is also required. You probably made that point. Okay, Shrubby in class, all glories to your Prabhupada. Thank you.